Welcome. Monday football doesn't seem to be sitting well with Bundesliga fans. Matt Ford was in Dortmund to see what an ultra-less game in the Westfalenstadion is like. Will the fan protest make a difference? Heimburg's season falls into deeper despair after losing the North Derby. Will they be able to turn their season around? And Leipzig's lost three straight games over the past week, and we discuss what the root of the problem could be. This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis van Opdorp here with Matt Ford. Matt, take us through the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, Match Day 24. First Football Club of Mainz 05-1. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football 1. Football Club Bavaria Munich 0. Hertha Berlin Sport Club 0. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim 1. Sport Club Freiburg 1. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896 0. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach 1. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart 1. Sports Community Frankfurt United 0. Sport Club Werder Bremen 1. Hamburger Sport Club 0. Bayer 04 Leverkusen Football 0. Football Club Schalke 04 2. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig 1. The First Football Club of Cologne 2. Ball Games Sport Prussia 09 Dortmund 1. Football Club Augsburg 1.
So Matt Ford had a very unique experience of going to the Westfalenstadion without the main ultras there. They protested the Monday night fixture by not attending the game, and Matt Ford was there, and here are the conversations he had.
Good evening and welcome to this latest section of the Tribune podcast on the road. It's a slightly unusual Bundesliga match day today because we're out and about on a Monday night. A freezing cold Monday night in Dortmund. Why are we here on a Monday night? That's because, as you may have heard or may have read, the German Football League has decided that there will be five Bundesliga games on Monday nights this season. It's not gone down too well among certain fans. We saw protests at the Eintracht Frankfurt game last week, where kickoff was delayed, where tennis balls were thrown onto the pitch. This week it's Borussia Dortmund's turn. 362 fan clubs have rallied to the call to boycott the game. 15,000 fans estimated will not be in the stadium. However, I'm outside the ground now with two supporters. I'm with Joanna and I'm with Constantine, who are here. They're here despite the boycott and despite the cold. Joanna, first of all, to you, do you understand why people are boycotting the game? And secondly, why are you here?
Yes, I really understand that, because everyone have to work on Tuesday and Wednesday, and everyone have to work to stand up earlier, and so I really understand that and I really appreciate that, and I'm here because I'm invited, so
is it your first game?
Yeah, that's my really
your first
game.
Dortmund game. Really, so actually for you this is a chance to get a ticket.
Yeah, it's really a chance, and I'm... Yeah, the first time here in the stadium.
Did you buy a ticket off the club officially, or have you got your ticket from somebody who is boycotting?
I bought it from a club officially. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And what about you, Constantine? Is this your first game as well, or have you chosen not to boycott?
It's not my first game, so I didn't choose to boycott the game. But I can understand the people who boycott the game. Because, yeah, as Jana said, it's on a Monday and you have to work on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday, so it's not probably the best time to go on the stadium. And you'd probably work until 18 o'clock or something, so it's not probably that best time to go there, to be honest. And from the foreign people, from Augsburg or somewhere else where you're coming from, you probably have to leave your work earlier than... probably the before, so it's not that easy to come here, to be honest.
But for you tonight, it's obviously not a problem.
For me, it wasn't.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not that problem for me because I'm very close to Dortmund. That's not a problem. But if you're coming from far away, it might be a very big problem.
I think that's what a lot of people are talking about with the boycott, really, especially for away games, because how would you, if the game was the other way around, how would you be expected as a Dortmund fan to go from Dortmund all the way to Augsburg, which is in the south near So, Joanna, obviously, like you said, this is your first game tonight. When people think of Borussia Dortmund, they think about the yellow wall, the Südtribüne, the famous atmosphere. You'll never walk alone. Are you perhaps a little bit worried that the atmosphere won't be the same?
I don't really know, because I've never been here. But all my friends said it's the same voice and everyone's crying and screaming and it's very happy, so I don't know, I'm very excited for it, but I will take it like it is, and I don't know how it goes, but I'm very happy to be here and excited, and it's never be a reason to be angry or something, because the Südtribüne is not there. So I'm very excited.
I'm sure it'll still be a great game. I'm sure the fans who are in the stadium will be as passionate and vocal in their support as ever. Talking to some of the fans before Constantine, they were worried that the Monday games are just another example of an increasing commercialisation of the game. Would you agree with that, or how would you see that?
I think the stadium will not be the same as normal, because we are missing, I think, 20,000 people in this game. So the whole atmosphere will be very different. But I think it's a perfect sign for the Bundesliga DFL, I think that's the name of it.
Yeah, the German Football League.
Yeah, the German Football League, to show that we're not accepting the situation, because the normal people who actually want to watch football, that's a standard kind of people, are not actually making it, because they can't actually do it, because they're working people, and Borussia Dortmund is a club who is standing for working people. So it's actually a good sign to show we're not accepting the marketing and all the shit that they're standing for.
I think that's a good point, and that's what the supporters at the Dortmund Fan Project were saying as well, that especially in this region of Germany, in the Ruhrgebiet, football is so important to people. It has a particular tradition, a particular meaning to people. Last week, as I said, we saw the Eintracht Frankfurt fans. They protested inside the stadium. The Dortmund fans are protesting by staying outside the stadium. What do you think is the best way to do it?
I think the best way to do it is to stand outside, because to show... Okay, to say it's not the best way to show to stand outside, because it's a problem for the club as well, because they are missing supporters. But I think the DFL is only actually seeing it because they are missing. That's the kind of missing atmosphere in the stadium, and 20,000 people are not watching it. So I think probably missing the match is maybe the best way to show we are not accepting it. Because if you're there, you're kind of showing you are not accepting it, but kind of you are there. So it's probably not as good as Dortmund is doing it now.
Okay. Well, thank you for your thoughts, thank you for your opinions, and enjoy the game. And I hope it gets warmer inside the ground.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Outside the Westfalenstadion in Dortmund, I'm with Felix, a journalist here in Germany. You've been on the podcast before, so welcome back. As we've been hearing, 15,000 fans potentially boycotting the game tonight due to the fact that it's on a Monday. Normal in the Premier League, not so normal here. What are the reasons? Obviously, we've heard some of the fans talking, but what have you gathered are the reasons for fans boycotting tonight?
Well, the Dortmund fans, as is the case for so many sets of fans in Germany, this is about so much more than just Monday kickoffs. This is about commercialization of the games. This is about taking the games out of the hands of the fans and handing it over to basically other entities that have other interests. This is about the 50+1 rule. This is about RB Leipzig. This is about so many things. And the fact that the DFL decided to go with the broadcasters rather than with the fans when it comes to Mondays is another red line that has been crossed, and fans are protesting as they did last week, they will this week, and personally speaking, I think that rightly so. They have every right in the world. Peter Stöger said it, Watzke said it as well, and they're absolutely spot on.
Yeah, it seems to be a recurring theme, this this difficult balance that the league seems to be trying to get between TV viewers and TV rights and the supporters who go into the stadiums and create those atmospheres, which ironically are such a big attraction for the viewers watching on TV. Do you feel they're getting that balance wrong at the moment?
I do think they're getting their balance wrong. It's not just me that says that. A couple of professional entities, as I said, Dortmund CEO Watzke, quite a few DFL executives have spoken about that in the last couple of days, that maybe it would have been a smarter idea to try and involve more Sunday kickoffs. But it just goes to show that the thinking behind every single step that they take, that the executive, the people who run the game in Germany take, and indeed in the rest of Europe, some would argue, it's not about match day, match-going fans. It's about money. It's about television. It's about China, the US, foreign markets. It's no longer about the average person from the Ruhrgebiet who takes the train every single match day and makes the effort and spends his money to go to games. His or hers, I should say. And that's a problem for many people here. And every single person that grew up in a certain place and has feelings about that place and about the institutions that make that place will understand that and will feel for those Dortmund fans.
We're just going to walk down now towards the stadium entrances, and I must admit, I've been here quite a few times. Felix, you've been here on numerous occasions as well. There is a slightly different feeling to match day, isn't there? It is genuinely, looking around, maybe it's to do with the cold, I don't know, but it is genuinely a slightly emptier, isn't it?
It feels that way. I don't know if it's down to the fact that, as you said, we've been here quite a few times. We've experienced this place during much merrier and happier occasions. We've experienced this place.
I wouldn't call the Schalke 4-4 a merry occasion for the Dortmund fans.
The pre-match was a bit merrier for them, I would assume. But it feels that way. It feels like every single fan that will attend the game today understands there's something different about the game, even if they do attend it. And I can say the previous times I've been here, the train has been bouncing. People were singing songs, drinking, having fun, having a good time. That just wasn't the case on the way here. People were talking about the boycott. People were talking about the DFL. People were talking about modern football. People were mostly talking instead of singing.
And talking about everything except the football.
Exactly. And that says it all. That says everything you need to know, to be honest. And that should serve as a warning sign to the people who run the game and who run the league, basically.
Let's go against that trend for a second then, and let's actually talk about the football match, which is happening tonight, as people might have forgotten. Dortmund coming off the back of a 1-1 draw in Italy, which of course is actually one of the reasons the DFL have brought these games in, so they say, to give Europa League teams that extra day's rest after Europa League trips. It didn't benefit Red Bull Leipzig too well in their game in Frankfurt. They got beat. Do you think having the extra day's rest will benefit Dortmund tonight, or do you think Dortmund have bigger problems, or where do you think Dortmund are football-wise at the moment?
Well, football-wise, Peter Stöger did very well in terms of stabilising the team, and you can see it in the results. Yeah, they're not winning every single game, but you get the sense that professionally the players are trusting the coach more. He organizes the defense way better than his predecessor, and that shows. They haven't lost in what, 8-9 games, I don't know, in all competitions.
Still unbeaten under Peter Stöger.
Indeed, and I do think that they're gonna get a result today, and they're gonna get the points they need against Augsburg. I do, however, think that the lack of atmosphere, everything that around the football, will affect the team in one way or the other. If it were just in any other game, I would say Dortmund 3-0, easy, go home. But I just think it's going to be way harder today. Maybe not way harder, but it's going to be harder than usual for them, because of everything around the game.
It'll be interesting to see if the lack of support and the strange atmosphere will actually have an effect on the team. We don't know. Obviously, the last time something similar happened was when the Zoetribüne was closed as a punishment for the Wolfsburg game. That seemed to have no effect on the players. I think they won that 3-0. It was 3-1, 3-0. So that didn't have much of an effect, but we will see, because obviously the support, Dortmund's fanatical fans, the yellow wall, the ultras who make these stunning choreographies, they are an integral part of Borussia Dortmund's identity. So we will see how that goes on. Have we got team news or not?
We do.
Is Marco Reus starting? I've not seen anything.
I'll tell you in a second.
This is it. This is a live team news coming here from Dortmund, which you'll know it because you're listening to it after the game.
But I do have to say one more thing in that context. As you pointed out earlier, in the Bundesliga, the Bundesliga is one of the only leagues in the world, I think, where the attraction is, for the most part, not the play. The attraction is, in many, many cases, as it is here in Dortmund, the fans, the atmosphere they create.
Playing devil's advocate, would the football be a bigger attraction if the clubs had enough money to keep hold of players like Ousmane Dembélé?
I really don't think so. I really think that...
Because then the football would be better.
Not necessarily. I mean, when you think of the reason players are coming to Dortmund, when you take all factors into account, when you take the fact that we're not talking about New York, we're not talking about London, we're talking about a city that's not a major city in Germany, not a central place, and we're talking about a region that's not the easiest to live for a foreigner, especially if you come from a warmer country. When you take everything into account, you get the sense that the fans are playing a major factor also in the fact that signings are coming here in terms of how attention this club gets from abroad. And this, without the fans, this wouldn't have happened. This just simply wouldn't have happened.
Do you think that would be enough to encourage Michy Batshuayi to stay longer than a loan deal?
Well, given the fact that he played in the Premier League before, and we all know Premier League footballers, I'm not entirely sure. But I think Dortmund will do well to keep him. I think it's been a great signing for them, on and off the pitch. And I think they stand a chance in signing him. I don't think it's a lost cause like many do.
Okay, well, we'll see how it goes tonight anyway against Augsburg. On the pitch, a really important game for Dortmund. Can they go 5 points clear of Red Bull tonight, I think, can't they?
Three over Schalke and I think five over Red Bull.
Of course, well, the Schalke thing will be the main cause of concern for people around here. They're not exactly best mates. So, we'll catch up later, Felix, perhaps. That's it for the time being. And so, in front of 54,300 spectators, and therefore around 25,000 empty seats, the match finished. Borussia Dortmund 1, Augsburg 1. A missed opportunity for Dortmund, football-wise, but I mean, it really was the football that took a place in the background this evening, I would say. Felix, we've just arrived back in Cologne. Have you warmed up?
I'm working on it.
That was one chilly night of football in Dortmund. The atmosphere was an interesting one. The stadium announcer, Norbert Dickel, before the game, announcing to all the fans, he said, "We totally understand and we respect why some supporters have chosen to stay at home this evening," before adding that the club, Borussia Dortmund, agree with that. They are also against a further widening out of the match day into Mondays, and they'll be raising this when the next TV deal is discussed ahead of 2022, I think, the next one. Felix, what was the atmosphere like in the ground from where you were sitting?
Well, it was basically grim from the get-go. It was just, it didn't feel like a football game. It didn't feel like a Borussia Dortmund game. It just felt like, I don't know, some sort of a presentation, some sort of, I can't even describe it into a conventional term. It was just, the one thing I know for certain that I can tell that it didn't feel like a Borussia Dortmund game. Absolutely not.
Certainly a strange one. I think at the start of the game there were certainly attempts from the 10,000 people on the south stand, I would say, approximately. There were attempts to get the atmosphere going, but I mean it's always difficult in that sort of situation. Dortmund got off to a good start, of course. Really, another good goal from that trio again. Mario Götze out to André Schürrle into Marco Reus. That's definitely a winning combination for Dortmund at the moment. But they didn't build on it, did they?
No, it just felt like... I'm not sure if it's the general atmosphere at the stadium or it's actually the performance, the Dortmund performance football-wise, but it felt like they were wasteful. They had quite a few chances. They didn't really use them properly. And at the end of the day, it also cost them. I mean, it's sort of a recurring story in the last couple of matches. Dortmund losing, throwing away leads and not playing so well.
It is a recurring theme, and I think for that reason we can't really lay it on the atmosphere or lack of. And Mario Götze said as much after the game as well. He said you can understand why what's been done by the fans has been done, but you know, as a professional footballer, that's not the issue. He admitted they need to get more pace, more tempo into the game and start killing these games off. A missed opportunity. Do you have any concerns about Peter Stöger's style of play, or why are they lacking this tempo? Because the talent's there, isn't it?
The talent is there, but I think mostly Peter Stöger has been brought to Dortmund to stabilize them defensively and to stabilize them tactically. I think he's done that, and quite successfully, if you ask me.
Apart from set pieces tonight, of course.
Yeah, well, bring David Moyes for that. But, I mean, Peter Stöger, I believe he'll get the chance to build a proper team next season, and that's when he'll get tested. This season, he's been brought particularly for Dortmund not to lose it completely, and I think he's done just that. But when he'll get to do his own scouting, his own methods of working, his own preseason, just as important. I think he'll come up with way better results than what we've seen so far.
Never a dull moment is the Borussia Dortmund on or off the pitch. As we said, it finished 1-1, and thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
That was Matt Ford in Dortmund, and now he's sitting across from me in the studio. Matt, just give us a glimpse of what the new mood was like in the stadium without its most fervent supporters in attendance.
I think as we were wrapping it up last night, I think Felix, our colleague, put it right. It just didn't feel like Borussia Dortmund. And then if you extend that, it didn't feel like a Bundesliga match day. I've been to games under the lights on evenings there at Dortmund before, Champions League, midweek cup games, and it's always a special occasion. It just didn't feel like that, and I suppose that is precisely the point that the supporters were trying to get across with the boycott that they carried out. I think it's always important to point out that of course this wasn't just an ultra thing. That I think that often gets said quite a lot in the press, whether it was the Dortmund fans with this protest, whether it was Frankfurt last week, whether it's the issues going on at Hanover. It's not just the ultras, whatever that might mean to some people, like a small mob of 300-400 people causing problems. It's last night, 362 fan clubs boycotted that. Only three of those are ultra groups. 362, that's all sorts of supporters, young, old, working class, middle class, male, female, from Dortmund, from further afar. And it just goes to show that this is an issue which affects everyone. Football should be for everyone, and they all clearly felt, 20,000 fans at least, clearly felt that this step is a step that makes it not really for everyone. And it was certainly unique. It was very quiet. It was eerie at times. Wouldn't go so far as to say you could hear the players shouting to each other, but we all know that the Westfalenstadion is sold out week in, week out. Dortmund playing from one of the biggest average attendances in Europe, and a unique experience, and hopefully it'll have the right effect.
Speaking of effects, what effect do you think what effect do you think this will have now on Monday night games? We've seen comments now from Hans-Joachim Watzke, the CEO of Borussia Dortmund, saying the next time, basically, that this issue would come up, that they would probably, this issue being Monday night football games and television rights, they would be against it. Do you think that is something? Do you think that's something to build off of if you're basically fans in the Bundesliga?
Yeah, if you are a fan that went into or chose to boycott last night in the hope that some sort of change would come about, everyone's well aware that nothing's going to happen in the short term. This is all to do with the TV deal. The games have been put on those nights as part of the TV deal. As much as the league might argue that it's been specifically requested by the clubs to give the Europa League participants an extra day's rest, whether you go along with that and believe that's the main reason is up to you. Personally, I'm not quite convinced. I think no matter how small the additional revenue might be from these games, and they say it's less than 1% of the total revenue, no matter how small, the cynic in me thinks that even that would be enough for some of these clubs to bite the DFL's hand off. So nothing will happen in the short term. That deal's been agreed. That TV deal with this current schedule, scheduling pattern, runs until 2021. I don't know when the new TV deal is going to get negotiated, but yeah, when that comes about, Dortmund have now said, as one example, I think Frankfurt as well, that when it comes to the next negotiations, they'll be saying no, we're against Monday games, and if that's the case, then the supporters have done.
All right, who hasn't done a fantastic job this season has been Hamburg, which is kind of funny because
where do we start?
Well, if we start at the beginning of the season, they won their first two games, and we were on this podcast on match day two talking about how unbelievable it was, the fact that Hamburg had defeated Cologne, and they defeated I forget the first game of the season. I apologize, I don't have the fixture list in front of me, but they had won their first two games, but now they are bottom of the table, below Cologne, who have been at the bottom of the table almost the entire season.
Augsburg was the first game, wasn't it? It was where, yeah, when Nikolai Müller injured his did his ligament after 8 minutes, and that, well,
so
the rest is history.
This is a team that we talked about a little bit when Bert Hollerbach took over, and he doesn't seem to have made a difference at all.
No, he doesn't. I'm not sure what people really expected. I mean, I suppose Hollerbach is a former Hamburg player. He's from the region, knows the club, but his only really managerial success came at Würzburger Kickers. He led them from being a fourth division regional team up to the second division in consecutive seasons. However, then having arrived there and having been sort of heralded as a bit of a wonder kid, up and coming manager, they were then relegated straight away back down again. And Hollerbach was also relieved of his duties. He's known as a very tough disciplinarian. He's known as demanding a lot physically and work rate wise from his players. Whether that one season in Division Two with Würzburg exposed a tactical deficiency and simple ability to coach at that level, let alone the Bundesliga, perhaps I think that's an argument. And whether that then qualifies you to take over a club the size of Hamburg must also then be cast into doubt. But then, having said that, they've tried so many other options. So why shouldn't he have had a go?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think that there wasn't anybody else that was going to take over Hamburg, at this point in time.
Bringing Bruno Labbadia back, perhaps.
Right, and he probably wasn't going to want the job. I mean, it's weird enough that he took the Wolfsburg job, but that was obviously much more appealing to him than taking the Hamburg job again. But I heard those reputations too about Hollerbach, but about him being a disciplinarian and getting a lot of at least effort out of his players.
It seems to have worked.
But you still see players like Wallacy, who are beat in midfield and then lollygag back over to a defense to get to kind of get into a position where they could make a play, and that's not the type of effort that you need to have if you're a relegation bound team.
With Wallacy is that he was almost out. He had one foot out the door under Marcus Gisdol. He was moving. He was seemed to be angling for a move back to where to. I think he went to South America, didn't he?
Yeah, in Brazil, obviously. Yeah, he is Brazilian, yeah. And that's where he came from. So,
Marcus Gisdol was unhappy at that, and it was, when Hollerbach first came in, it was one of his big sort of statement moves in his opening couple of days where he said, no, I want to bring Wallacey back into the fold because he's the sort of player that I want fighting in my midfield for me. And everyone...
Where's the fight in midfield? Because I don't see it.
I know. It is bizarre to watch. And then there seems to be a lot of people who thought, oh, yeah, well, hang on, you might be able to turn this around here a little bit. But no, that's obviously come to nothing. Why should it have been anything different? When Hollerbach took over, Hamburg were just 1 point below the relegation playoff spot, 16th. Now they're,
below Cologne. They are on 17 points. They have
two points later. And yeah. Now they're 7 points adrift of Mainz. And yeah, like you said, even worse. But probably the biggest indicator of how low they've fallen and just how disastrous the situation is that Cologne are level on points with them. Yeah. And if anything, I mean, the two of them are looking doomed, really, if we're being honest. But if you had to put money on one of them getting out of it, you'd now say Cologne, wouldn't you, ahead of Hamburg?
Well, yeah, I think that's absolutely clear. And actually, we should take a look at the relegation zone now that we're 10 games left in the season. You have Hamburg's fixture list down, and they're playing a lot of six-pointers.
I do. I thought we'd go through this, and I thought... Me and you can decide and predict how many points they'll get from each of these last 10 games,
right.
And let's see where they come from. And the big one is this Saturday coming, isn't it? Mainz at home, which that's not just a 6-pointer, that's a 10-pointer. That's
Mainz right now, as we're recording this podcast, obviously sits in that 16th relegation playoff spot.
Yeah, so for Hamburg, it's an absolute must win. They've got to close that gap to 4 points with any hope whatsoever. So for the time being, I think, because we've got 9 more games to come, well, I'm going to say they're going to lose every single one, probably. I'm going to give them a win. I'm going to say...
They're playing at home, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, because I know Mainz played... They drew with Wolfsburg at home, so that means they're probably going away this week. And they're real... They were a strange club coming into the season just because they were trying to get production from so many different corners of Europe rather than the kind of obviously they're missing Christian Heidel as their sporting director and they're doing the best that they can with the resources they have, but it's just what they've been recruiting. They recruited this guy Victor Fischer from Denmark, and now he's already gone.
We've said it of a few clubs. It seems a complete departure at Mainz from precisely those characteristics and those qualities that made them a successful Bundesliga club.
Yeah, they lost their spine, so I think you have to give them a little bit of wiggle room.
Although having said that, despite a less than average away record, that was a decent 2-0 win away at Hertha Berlin last week. But even so, I think, let's give Hamburg a chance then. Let's give them 3 points against Mainz. Next up, Bayern away.
No.
Sorry, nothing there.
Actually, the last two times they've gone to Munich, they've lost 8-0 both times.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So they might as well forfeit that game because they're not going to win it, and they might be better for their goal difference if they forfeit that game and take a 3-0 loss.
Next up, Hertha Berlin at home.
Ooh, that's a toughie.
I'm going to go for a draw.
No, I think Hertha would win that.
You think Hertha would win away at Hamburg?
I think. But Hamburg is just so bad. I mean, they are just so bad. And I would guess that someone like Davy Selke or Vedad Abisevic would be able to get on the wrong side of Papadopoulos or Mavrai or Van Drongelen, even this 20-year-old that they've been playing all season.
So you don't fancy them to even get a point at home to Hertha?
I really don't. I mean, they got a point away at Leipzig. That was their most meaningful point under Bernd Hollerbach. You know, they should have gotten a point. They should have gotten a point against Werder Bremen, and they didn't. Against their biggest rival, they couldn't do it. So,
such a bad game.
Yeah, that was
such a bad game. Okay, well, Hertha, no points there either. After that, Stuttgart away.
Typhoon Korkut has put something in the water in Stuttgart.
I was going to say the same. Before Korkut came, I would have fancied them because Stuttgart were totally unpredictable under Hans Wolf. But under Korkut, is it 3-1-0 wins on the bounce now?
Yeah, 3-1-0 wins on the bounce. Yeah,
there you go.
Incredible.
A win's a win, so I'd fancy them for another 1-0 win there. So, another defeat for Hamburg, sorry. Schalke at home.
Schalke at home, no way. No way. I mean, you look at the way that Schalke played.
This is why I wanted to give them a point at home to Hertha, because I wanted to give them a chance.
Exactly. I mean, but if you look at those games individually, I think that's what we're doing. I mean,
it's difficult to see, isn't it?
If you look at the 5-game stretch, you say, they could get maybe 4 points in 5 games, and maybe we'd be able to start something. But I really don't believe that they can. I really don't.
Hoffenheim away?
No, I think Hoffenheim have underachieved, but
they've underachieved, and they have a habit this season of just not turning up.
True.
Could there be a point there?
But I think that Andrej Kramaric is getting into form again, and he I'm not entirely sure. I haven't looked into why Julian Nagelsmann hasn't used Kramaric more before, but I think that the way that he's using his team, they're playing much better than they were in January, I think.
So, again, you don't fancy them to even get a point?
No.
Yeah, another defeat. Dear me. Freiburg at home. You must fancy them to get a point against Freiburg.
But it's Freiburg, though. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they can draw against Leverkusen. They can do nothing and then get a penalty, and Nils Pedersen will convert it. That's
at home?
The thing.
At home, yeah, but on the road...
Yeah, that's true.
We have to give Hamburg a point.
Let's give them a point against Freiburg.
A 1-1 draw, so they get a point there. Wolfsburg away. Surely there's a point in them for that.
There's a point in that one, definitely.
There you go.
I think
another point there. Frankfurt away. Penultimate game of the season.
No way.
Not the way Frankfurt are going. Gladbach at home. Last game of the season.
No way.
Make or break.
I know that Gladbach has also underachieved, but I also think that they're getting some players back healthy, especially someone like Christoph Kramer, who's the defensive rock in their midfield. I think that's a way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
Gladbach games at home. Last game of the season.
That makes it a little bit more interesting, but no, I don't know. I think maybe a point at the most. I don't think they would win that game.
A point. That means that in those last 10 games, Davis, you see Hamburg getting 6 points.
Right.
6 points. And this is only because we've been kind and saying that they're going to win the massive game against Mainz on Saturday.
Mainz.
I reckon they'd beat Hertha at home.
Right.
So for me, they're getting 9 points from 10 games, which either way is not going to be enough.
Yeah, that still gives them 26 points. And we've talked a little bit about where this leaves them now, because with Hollerbach, I think that they were also preparing themselves for the scenario of going down again. I mean, their fans have not prepared themselves. We've read reports that they're going to block off sections of fans they can't.
Yeah, this is true. Hamburg have literally released a statement today, an announcement to the fans saying that there will be internal blocks between the sections so that the fans can't walk around the stadium as they normally would. There's going to be additional security checks outside. They're not going to sell beer inside the stadium. And this is a result of the issues happened at the last two Hamburg games at home to Leverkusen. There was the banner saying that we'll chase you through the city. And then there was the attempted pitch invasion after that game when they got beat. There was the large amount of pyrotechnics and fireworks fired out of the top tier away at Bremen, where the game was almost called off. The fans have lost the plot completely. We can all look at the fans sometimes and say, oh, they have fantastic, great displays, great choreographies, great atmosphere, fantastic. But at the end of the day, when it comes to, you're meant to be supporting your team, and how on earth firing rockets at the roof during your biggest derby when your team is about to go down for the first time in their history, how on earth that gets behind the team?
It's almost
even I don't get that.
It's almost as if they're trying to get Hamburg to forfeit these games, because
who knows, but they're not covering themselves in any glory. The whole thing is an absolute shame, because over the past 5, 6, 10 years, those fans have proven themselves to be so incredibly loyal, so incredibly fanatical, and in the most difficult and testing of circumstances. Hamburg's a great club, Hamburg's a great city, they deserve better. Whether it's from the fans, the players, the coach, the sporting director, the board, the investor, Michel Kühne,
The whole entity deserves better, and it's unfortunate, but it's about time they went down and pressed the reset button.
I think it's not. We've talked about this in Bremen earlier this season. It's not undeserved. That's the thing.
No, not at all. They totally deserve it.
I mean, it's hard to feel sympathy for them because of the way that the club is run. If Kuna does end up no longer investing in Hamburg, that might be that is going to be a bad thing for them. But it also might be a good thing because it might allow them to get some stability in the higher parts of the club.
To revamp the club and make it attractive to other potential sponsors who want to be associated with the club.
Because there are sponsors. I mean, there are people that want to invest in the team. I mean, there was a fan that wanted to get rid of the Imtech Arena name, so he gave the club enough money to return it
to
its own name.
Absolutely no shortage of support. Like I said, Hamburg is one of the biggest and biggest supported clubs in Germany. So there'd be no danger any lack of support or lack of investment opportunities for people. But as it is at the moment, it cannot be their expectation that drives them every year just to stay in the league by the skin of their teeth. People keep saying, "Oh, well, it should be below them." Well, why should it when you're a club that's run like that?
To give people a bigger perspective of how it was run, there were stories that came out last year when Bruno Labbadia was the coach. That there were times that Labbadia wasn't even invited by Kuna to talk about the players that Hamburg was going to acquire. How do you not include the coach of your team in these discussions? Now, of course, there's cases like Dortmund where maybe the coach had too much power and they were about to complete a transfer and someone like Thomas Tuchel would basically vetoed it. But at the same time, you have to include your coach in the team building process. That's the two roles go hand in hand in a way, because I mean, it's the coach that has to get the best out of the team. And there was, I think at the time, Bruno Labbadia wanted to get Dennis Iogo and some other midfielder, and instead they got two guys two younger guys, one of them being Douglas Santos, that have not lived up to expectations or the transfer fees that they paid for them. So, I mean, Alan Halilovic, too. That was the other one that was brought in under Bruno Labbadia. And he hasn't... I don't think he's played more than a minute for Hamburg. And he cost the club 10 million euros in a transfer fee. And it's just... It's just crazy how this team has been run. And it really makes me... It makes it difficult for me to feel sympathy for this club, even though it is so well supported. And we talked about earlier this season that the Nord Derby is one of the better rivalries in the Bundesliga. But at the same time, both of the teams have not been run very well. So the Bundesliga, maybe it's... They don't deserve to have that rivalry anymore, for a few years.
Well, there'll be enough good Nord derbies in Division 2 with São Paulo and potentially Hansa Rostock.
So, that's true.
I thought Kicker summed it up. The Kicker magazine over here on Monday morning, their headline, they are second division in every aspect.
All right, so now it's time to get to our Shout from Rosette section. And thank you guys so much for doing basically our flash poll of the Shout from Rosette. Rosette still, as an American, Zed still sounds very strange for me to say.
Rosie, man.
Because Rosie is the way that I would say it. But in any case, the fans voted for us to talk about Leipzig, and that's what we're going to do. And it's their very interesting case because...
46 votes in about 2.5 hours is actually quite all right.
Yeah,
so thank
quite
you.
Good. Yeah, so thank you so
everyone.
Much.
Cheers.
And we're doing this every week, like we said. So please vote in the poll when we post it. Leipzig is a very interesting case because they have lost three times in the last week or so, and it's the first time that under Ralf Hasenhüttl that they have lost three games in a row. Of course, they also lost not only the two Bundesliga games on the weekends, but also the second leg of their tie against Napoli, which they really
tried their best to throw that away.
Yeah, they really tried their best to throw it away, and they really played scared. And I thought that was a very interesting thing to see, considering how much confidence they played with last season.
Let's start with confidence then, because I think we were talking about this before in the office, weren't we? That there are a few things that have got that seem to have gone wrong there this season. I think confidence is one. I think it came to the fore in that second leg against Napoli after having played. After the first leg was an outstanding performance. It was classic Hasenhüttl football, classic Ralf Rangnick football. I think Napoli hugely underestimated what RB would bring there. Second leg, yeah, the confidence issue, and obviously it's not the first time they've struggled with that. Three times already in 2018, and it's not even 2 months old yet. They've thrown away 1-0 leads and lost 2-1 against Freiburg, and then twice in the past week against Frankfurt, and then the other day against Cologne. Yeah, and it does seem to be an issue. They go one up, but they no longer seem to have that ability which they were so feared for last year, where they were relentless. They will just continue with this incredibly high intensity pressing game, these quick counter attacks, and teams just couldn't live with them. This very narrow and dynamic 4-2-2-2 formation, didn't they? And no one seemed to know how to pick them up. That confidence seems to have gone, and that maybe brings on to one of the other issues with them this year, which we can discuss. Is do we think it's down to personnel problems? Because I think we can name at least one key player they've missed in each key position. Halstenberg has been out for 8-9 weeks with a broken hand,
and Bernardo has not picked up.
Bernardo's not been playing, and that's coincided with this time period where they keep conceding ridiculous goals from set pieces. Which I think I've said before, I think it's incredible that a team that is so well-drilled and so meticulously prepared continuously ships goals from set pieces.
Yeah, you look at the way that Bernardo defended against Cologne. Marcel Risse had all day to put in crosses from the right flank. I mean, Cologne
and Marcel
had
Risse
actually
needs all day to put crosses in from the right.
Right, exactly. And he is a player that is enjoyable to watch for Cologne, but this is not Joshua Kimmich that we're talking about. This is Marcel Risse, and I honestly think that Cologne should have had more goals in that game because of the sheer service on the flanks that they were allowing. Now, I think Klostermann on the right, I think he's been huge for Leipzig, especially since they lost also not only Halstenberg but Konrad Leimer. And the way that he's been able to build on his strong Olympic performance after missing the entire year, I believe with a knee injury. And the fact that he's able to play both flanks is huge for them. But he's the only one that seems to be engaged on the flanks or shutting down service and trying to prevent that first ball in. I mean, Bernardo was he loses track of someone in midfield, and he just does not get back in time. And I think that is just, maybe it is down to drilling, and maybe it is down, but maybe it's just down to the fact that last year they were the new kids on the block. They didn't really have anything to lose, and this year they're just trying to manage, make it through the season, making it through three competitions.
I think there was a lot of psychological stuff at play last year. They did come into the division with a relatively, fairly revolutionary style of play and formation, and I think I'm always a bit wary of saying, that they got found out. I don't think it's as simple as that, that teams suddenly just learn how to play against them. But I think that fear has definitely gone. We saw a couple of times last season that teams did realise that, okay, perhaps maybe if we just let them have the ball, because they were so happy to let other teams pass it around and then win the ball quickly and hit teams on the break and then finish the game having scored 3-4 goals but having only had about 30-35% possession. And the example that always stands out, I think, for me from last season was when Hamburg went there and won 3-0.
probably the best performance we've seen from Hamburg in 2 or 3 years. So yeah, maybe that is part of it. Maybe teams have learned to play against them a little bit. Then you have to suggest that Rania and Hasenhüttl have not been able to adapt to a plan B, which again I always find strange. But when talking about that team in particular, given the unique situation from which they come and the unique way in which they're managed and run and organised, and everything there is so meticulous and planned through, that there just seems to be no plan B there. Especially when it comes to dealing with teams who are happy to let them have the ball and then sit back.
Well, it's interesting because Hasenhüttl had when he was at Ingolstadt, even when he was at Ingolstadt, his main reputation was he did not concede goals. He had a very high pressing game. It was really difficult just for teams to build up the play. And maybe that style, maybe he's had to just change style because he knows that you can't do that in three competitions and get through to the end of the season.
Yeah, that was definitely a suggestion that was made last year when people questioned how would they perform having to balance the Champions League and obviously now Europa League. Progression in the cups irrelevant because they've been knocked out in the first round
second round to Bayern Munich.
Last season was Dresden,
first
wasn't it?
Yeah, the first, first, round, first yeah. round. Well, that's the other thing. I at the end of last season I compared their run to second place to Leicester's run to the title in the Premier League. If you look at Leicester, when they won the title, I don't think they played more than two rounds in either cup competition.
They weren't in
Europe, and they basically just had 38 Premier League games to play. That's kind of the same thing.
It's definitely the factor.
Even less for Leipzig because it was just 35 games that they played last year.
The last couple of times that Liverpool have come close to the title in England has been years in which they've not been in the Champions League and they've been able to focus on one competition. So I think that's definitely a factor. Again, it just surprises me that that's not been planned for, because that organisation is built on pure planning. Everything is done to a blueprint, so it just surprises me that that's not the case. Going back to the personnel, I think if we move into midfield, two absolutely key players which have been missing either physically or seemingly psychologically not there. I think obviously Emil Forsberg has been out injured for a significant period of time, and he's an absolutely huge loss for them. One of the players of the season last year.
And I just want to just say, he really also hasn't been the same since the rumors of him going abroad have come about either.
True. And speaking of rumors of players going abroad and players getting distracted, that leads us to Naby Keita, who again has also been nowhere near the player he was last season. When Forsberg was arguably one of the best players in the league, Keita was arguably the best. And he might not have been out injured for huge periods of time, but he's not the same player. His disciplinary record has been disappointing as well. Three red cards, I think, he's picked up, which he's also seen him miss games. Is there still a Champions League ban hanging over him when he goes to Liverpool? I'm not sure. I might be making that up. But yeah, that's been a loss for them either way, it's having an effect. Every now and again, the two young lads, Jean-Kevin Augustin and Bruma, have shown what they can do. Clearly, huge talents, exciting to watch. However, still in their first Bundesliga season, still very raw, and it'll be a while until we see what they can really do.
That's the thing, though. They have this mentality of not buying players that are over 23 years old. Even Stefan Ilsanker is still in his late 20s because he joined the club when he was in his early 20s. And most of the players that they have in their mid to late 20s have been at the club for a very long time, outside, I think, of maybe Marvin Kompare and some other defenders. All credit to what Dayot Upamecano has done this season, but he's also still a teenager. And the fact that they're relying in a way on Jean-Kevin Augustin to come in and replace Timo Werner when Timo Werner plays in midweek, that's a lot of of huge pressure to put on such a young player. And we were talking about it with Dortmund, with Pulisic too, or
and with Isak and Sancho.
Yeah, or with Bayern Munich, even with Kingsley Coman. But with Leipzig, it's almost all of their players are in their early 20s, and this isn't necessarily a surprise, because this is a young team that is in its second season in the Bundesliga and is in its first season in European competition, and we maybe have expected a regression. But yeah, at the same time, with the resources that Leipzig have, it is somewhat surprising that they did not come up with the right solution to try to deal with. And not necessarily in European competition. Maybe they would. Maybe their record in European competition would have stayed the same, whether they had the right players or not. But I think in the Bundesliga, drop off is more surprising to me than what they've done in Europe or in the German Cup.
Definitely, and I wonder if it's a self-imposed philosophy, isn't it? Bringing in young players, and I say bringing in because there seems to be a bit of a confusion sometimes that they bring through young players, when statistically not one single youth player from Red Bull's own academy has ever played in the Bundesliga in their 1.5 seasons. So this idea that they somehow bring players through their own academy is a bit of a misnomer. No, they purchased them in from elsewhere.
Yeah, they were rumored with it. We were laughing, I think, when the rumors came up. They were linked with some 17-year-olds and some 16-year-olds from Portugal and from Sweden. I think they acquired a 17-year-old or 16-year-old.
Yeah, didn't. I think one was Portuguese. I forget his name, but I think the deal fell through in the end.
Right. But that's who they're looking at.
Playing for Benfica's second team. Yeah, I know, but looking to pay 16 million euros for him.
Yeah.
There's just a few little asterisks, I think, that need to be added to some of the things that get said about them. Mm-hmm. And great for young players. Who else can spend 16 million euros on a 16-year-old that's been playing for Benfica's second team? It's incredible. But I just wonder if, and it is only a theory, really. They have this self-imposed philosophy of young players and only buying under 23. Is that how Red Bull genuinely want their product there to look, as representing young players? Or is it because they find it difficult to attract more of established players for whatever reason? Maybe that also plays a role. But I think something needs to change, because if we're looking at them being competitive in the long term and on multiple fronts, which I imagine has to be the purpose, has to be the aim, because otherwise why would the thing exist? I think they're going to have a look at that strategy and see where it takes them.
Before we go, I wanted to ask you one more thing, and it occurred to me when I saw Timo Werner on the bench. Last season he lit the world on fire, and he was really good in the Confederations Cup.
He's not having a bad season this year.
He's not
either.
Having a bad season, but are you a little worried about him in terms of his place in Germany and what he can do for the German national team with the World Cup not very far away? Or do you think this season with all the turmoil and regression that the club has had, that basically he'll still show up in the national team shirt at the World Cup and score and be in a candidate for the Golden Boot?
Candidate for the Golden Boot, I don't know, but if you're the main striker for Germany, which Timo Werner is going to be, I have no doubt about that. Then, who knows? I wouldn't totally exaggerate and overstate the turmoil at Red Bull Leipzig. Not sure I could turmoil. I'm not sure.
Yeah, turmoil wasn't the right word, but basically regression is what I meant to say.
I'm not sure a club that exists in those circumstances can ever really be in turmoil. I wouldn't worry about Timo Werner at all. I think he's precisely the sort of striker that Germany have lacked. Had a Timo Werner been on the pitch in that semi-final against France in the Euros, it might have been a slightly different story, because on that day, Germany looked a lot like Gladbach, actually. lots of nice passing and build-up, but with Thomas Müller was up front, I think, wasn't he? Trying to lead the line. And that's a Timo Werner type player is precisely who they've lacked. And so he'll definitely go, and then probably one of either Gomez or Wagner.
So you don't have any worries that he's not going to produce?
Not at all.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and if you like what you hear, leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Ford on Twitter at Matt_4D and me at Davis_Fanoptor. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Christoph Kramer scored the only goal in Gladbach's 1-0 win over Hanover. It was his first ever goal with his left foot and his first from outside the penalty area. I guess that's two birds with one stone. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.